Welcome to another episode of EVA India Insights podcast series, Celebrating Remarkable Women. I'm Sonu Iyer, partner and executive sponsor for Diversity, Equity and Inclusiveness at EVA India. It is my pleasure to introduce our esteemed guest for our episode today, a truly remarkable woman, Rama Vedashri, former CEO of Data Security Council of India. Rama has over 35 years of experience in the technology industry. Under her leadership, Data Security Council set out to make India a global hub for cybersecurity and grow the cybersecurity industry in India to $35 billion USD by 2025. She has diverse experience in IT consulting and e-governance, both in the private sector and within the government. Rama, many thanks for making the time to be here with us in this episode of our EVA India Insights podcast series.
Thank you, Sonu, and thank you to the EVA team for having me on this podcast. Always a pleasure to talk to another industry friend and colleague.
Thank you, Rama, for making the time for this podcast series. Rama, I wanted to maybe start with a question. As I said, you know, you ventured into tech industry much before many others did. And, you know, I wouldn't want to call you grand old lady of technology, but yet I think you went on to do remarkable things in your stint in technology industry. So can you talk a bit about it? I mean, the key highlights when you started out and today where we are.
I think when we started out at that point of time, you know, early 90s, it was all about evangelizing very early stages of computerization. I mean, whether it was with CMDs or with the departmental heads of various enterprises and also with the state governments where I've engaged. I mean, you had to actually demonstrate and evangelize the power of technology. I think we continue to do the same thing in the industry, except that what is the technology solutions and what is the transformation power of the technology keeps changing. Initially, it was all about using, you know, computers for office productivity, later for enterprise applications, manufacturing resource planning. Then it came into the citizen services. In fact, at least in India, I think state governments led the way in adopting technology for government to citizen services, many state governments. I mean, I've had the opportunity to work with many of them initially in the south and of course a little bit in the west and later in the north. So I think initially the role was for the entire collective technology industry, which was a very small industry at that point of time, was about having those early conversations with customers in India on how will they leverage the technology. Later it was all about, you know, how will you leverage the networking? Few decades later, it was all about how will you adopt cloud? Now we are looking at how do we adopt the new technologies in AI or in, you know, generative AI. So I think it's waves of technology and having those conversations with customers on business benefits of the technology and getting them, you know, excited at an early phase of a new technology wave. I think that's what our industry does. And I've had an incredible opportunity from a very early stage of computerization efforts in India, both in the large enterprises and state government, especially.
Rama, I'll come to the technology bit, but when you know, really from a perspective of female representation in tech industry, do you think where we've reached is satisfactory or more needs to be done about it? And if so, what are some of the steps that we could, as at enterprise level, at government level, that you would recommend that should be taken to increase the numbers of women in tech? My simple math is world's population, 50% are women. So in everything, at least there should be an equal seat on the table, an equal number of women that should be represented. Maybe too idealistic, but let me hear from you.
Yes, I think that's a great goal to have, that we should have women, 50% women representation, particularly in a technology industry, which is, you know, always the sunshine sector, as we call it, right? We are way ahead of many other sectors in adopting the best practices, driving inclusion, driving, you know, gender parity. I think we've led the way in India and globally also. So there's a lot more to do, but I would, you know, not really get too bogged down by it. Because if you see over the last 20 years plus and the last 10 years plus, there is increasing women representation at the entry level, at the mid level, and at CA level. We do see a lot of CXOs in India in the technology sector. And we are also seeing that in the user organizations or enterprises. When we look at women leaders who are CISOs, who are CTOs, who are CIOs, I think that representation is increasingly growing. Where I would say we need to do more is now have a more nuanced approach about in what roles is women representation lesser, and focus on getting working towards at a country level, both in terms of partnering with industry, with academia, and of course with government, in getting more women into roles in which maybe representation is lesser. So I think we need to do a little more deep dive on rather than having a generalized thing about 50%. Maybe in some roles already we are they're very close to 30 plus and 40%. So I would say do a deep dive. When I was in DSCI, we realized that in cybersecurity, the representation of women workforce was lagging behind the representation in the overall technology industry. So that's why we had this Women in Security program. We had programs like Cyber Siksha. Academic institutions also played this role. So I think we need to do a more nuanced and a deliberate approach so that in functions, in disciplines, some of the cutting edge innovation areas, startup entrepreneurship, where the representation of women is lesser, or we need to, put a little more focus on that.
And indeed, as you rightly pointed out, to the multiple schemes that the government itself has launched, and it's very much part of the government's vision of Amrit Kal, Sashakt Nari Saksham Bharat. So, and many more such schemes and initiatives, I hope will ensure that the numbers get better. Now, from a technology, even before I go into technology, ma'am, would it be possible to sort of, expand on data security? For a layman who's listening to you or a layperson listening to you, how do they understand what data security means?
Yeah, so I would say from a layman perspective, one is data security. The other one is being aware about data privacy. I think they're a little too nuanced way of looking at it. I think from a layman perspective, I think it is all about how do you make sure that whenever you are engaging digitally on an online platform or on a mobile application, do a little more due diligence on the controls in that application and making sure that your configuration is set properly so that you can check what kind of data is being accessed, what kind of controls are there. Leverage the configuration features that are there in the online applications, websites, mobile applications, so that you can stay safe. Because I think there is enough in the technology where maybe we need to put in a little more effort is how are we educating our end users so that they can configure their security features, their privacy features better. That is there even on the social media platforms. I think we start using a lot of technology and applications where without even, I'm not talking about, the younger students or kids, or the very senior citizens. I'm talking about even very educated end users. They don't invest that little few minutes to be able to check the configuration features of the and how do you, do that necessary lockdowns and leverage the features that are anyway built to stay safe. So that's one thing. And I think we collectively as industry need to do, I think there is adequate security awareness that has happened thanks to all the frauds and the momentum of online payments, but I think we need to do a little more about privacy awareness so that DSCI also does quite a bit of it, but I think at an end user citizen level there's a lot more that needs to be done in terms of awareness.
Ma'am, as you were saying, I think what was sort of going through my head, the next time you get that question, should you accept the cookies or accept only limited cookies, only functional cookies? I think that's a question that, as you pointed out, it's not about the senior citizens. It's not about the very young people at you know, regular who are encountering technology every day still don't seem to want to understand what is the question being asked and why is it critical from a data security perspective to answer this right?
That's because when somebody is throwing that question at you, the provider or the website or any one of them, we are in a tearing hurry to read what we want to read, right? Or watch what we want to watch. So accept all, you know, is the quicker way rather than click on and see what are all the features and say, no, I want to only accept the minimum functional cookies and I don't want to do anything. I want to, you know, decline all others. We don't invest that 2-3 seconds which are required to be able to do that.
I think that's a very useful tip. And many of my listeners today would actually change their behavior after listening to this. Ma'am, I also want to now kind of get into something which is, very close to what we are hearing, seeing, and I know very close to you. You've recently authored a research paper on towards trustworthy artificial intelligence, AI. And, you know, I want to hear more about it. And also today's context, you know, when, on Wednesday, EU Parliament has actually green-lighted the artificial intelligence regulations, and I'm probably the first region to do so. I want to be able to understand, you know, what is it, how does this development has to be seen in the context of our country, India, and also a bit more from your paper that you've, you know, recently published.
Yeah. So this is towards trustworthy AI. That's a research paper that I have authored. I've collaborated with a policy think tank called The Dialogue. So it was a team of us who have authored this paper. The focus of this paper was initially, you know, to look at trustworthy AI and study, do a landscape study of everything that is happening in many countries in terms of some of them are legislative measures like the EU Act that you talked about. Some of them are frameworks like the NIST framework. Some of them are strategy documents like the Niti Aayog AI strategy that came up 2-3 years back, right? And a lot of them have many principles. So we said, can we take a shot at the team and I that we work together? We said, can we take a shot at studying all that is emanating from various countries, including multilateral organizations like UN and its entities, right? And collate what are all the principles that are coming out of these frameworks, policies, strategy documents, and acts like the EU Act, and look at evolving a typology of principles for trustworthy AI. So if you see our research paper, the entire focus is on what is the typology of principles. We've taken a look at among these 9 principles that we came up with. One is we said, let's have the typology. And in each of these countries, policies plus legislative or frameworks, which is focusing on which principles. So there's a nice dashboard kind of a thing that we have done. And we said, fine. I mean, initially, that was our effort. We started there. Then we said, how is it going to help an industry which reads the paper, right? Which could be a user industry, a CTO in a bank or a CTO in a hospital or a, you know, privacy head in some other organization or startups or the providers. That's when we actually said, let's, you know, stop for a while and understand how can we make this research paper. Fine, all the principles are there. We know what each of those principles, we have tried to explain that. But to make it really relevant and useful, we said we need to give some guidance on how to operationalize these principles. And when we said when operationalization, there is undue focus on the provider. The provider could be a startup, big tech, you know, any solution provider using leveraging AI. But we said, if you look at the entire life cycle of developing, deploying, and continuing to use an AI system, there are actually 3 stakeholders, which is the developer, which is the entire provider entity. I'm not talking about the individual developer. There is a deployer, which is, you know, a hospital, a bank, a state government, whoever, you know, anyone, organization which is deploying an AI solution, and a user. And the user itself varies. For example, for a fintech solution, the user may not be the consumer. The user could be the workforce of a bank or a wealth management company or a lending company, right? And sometimes there may be something where an end user using, like, you know, the AI chatbots or AI customer service applications and things like that. In a hospital also, if you see, the end user may be the medical professional, right? So we categorized on how do you operationalize it for developers, deployers, and end users. And I must confess that this is a first attempt. We are not saying we have all the answers. We need to test this operationalization in some organizations and then, you know, enhance it, tweak it, and fine tune it. We've also looked at what were the technical measures and non-technical measures. And we focused on two sectors, financial and healthcare, because that's where I think for quite some time AI was mainstreamed and there's a lot of regulatory attention.
Thank you, ma'am, for that. Okay, coming back to, you know, staying on AI, I was looking or checking you out on Twitter, and there's a book you recommended, The Coming Wave by Mustafa Suleiman. Do you think it's a good read, and maybe our listeners can get onto it?
Yeah, I think overall, if you're in the technology industry or you are a technologist, I think Mr. Suleiman's book is a great book to read. I think he brings a lot of balancing perspectives rather than, you know, succumb to a lot of scaremongering. He does bring out the perspectives of what are the safeguards that are needed and what needs to be done. And he's looking at AI not as an independent silo technology. He's talking about a bunch of related frontier technologies together along with AI. So it's a great book. It does need some attention to read it and absorb it. I myself, for one or two chapters, I had to reread it to really absorb the learnings from his book.
Thank you for that recommendation. You know, I want to be able to talk about Rama the person, Rama Vedashri. You know, what would you say? And I'm sure in your illustrious career, you've had multiple career highlights. But something that stands out as you look back and reflect on your career, what has been a, you know, mega career highlight? And, you know, given the industry that you are in?
I would say one of my highlights, which I still cherish, was a statewide government to citizen e-governance project in my home state, then Andhra Pradesh, combined Andhra Pradesh. And, you know, in those early days when, you know, you're not sure whether your WAN link will work when you want to do a live public demo. And we did this massive e-governance showcase when then our chairman, Mr. Bill Gates from Microsoft, and our state chief minister, Mr. Nala Chandrababu Naidu, in a public event where there were 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people, where we could demonstrate this e-governance solution, and, you know, where a citizen, an elderly gentleman, actually availed that service. I mean, I would say it was a huge risk because those days, wide area networks and internet connectivities, all of that was, you know, not so predictable. Now, I mean, I think it's a cakewalk to do any such demos. I would say that is one of the highlights. There's another one where, interestingly, again, very early days of my career, when I was in NIIT, I had an opportunity, if you know this Genting Highlands in Kuala Lumpur, right? It's a theme park. A lot of families and children from all over Asia, including India, go. So it was a very early days when they were trying to use object-oriented analysis design to create a food card. You know, the kinds which we have in our malls, right? Where you go to a food court, you get a card and then you keep swiping it. I mean, they experimented with this in mid-90s. So in Genting Highland, they had many food outlets, right from very, you know, high-end dining restaurants to like food outlets for a common person. So they were trying to do an integrated food cart thing. So, I mean, it was a very innovative solution. I would say that is the one. And then I think some other highlights could be is contributing to this cybersecurity growth journey, where I think in less than 5-6 years, DSEI and partnering with government, partnering with all the industry members. I think the cybersecurity industry, in a span of 5 years, grew from 3.5 to 4 million to almost 15, sorry, to 3.5 to 4 billion to almost 15 billion in 2022 December. Now it's even higher. So I think the growth of the cybersecurity industry and the growth of the startup and the services ecosystem serving the world, I think that's been a great highlight.
Wow, that's really, really impressive. Maybe to end, any, you know, advice that you want to give to young women, you know, who are aspirational to get into technology industry, maybe focus on AI or data security, you know, whatever, you know, sort of tips you would want to be able to give them.
It's not really tips, but what I would say is be excited about any new technology wave. I think, you know, we sometimes get very comfortable with what we are very good at and the skills that we have developed. I think continuously trying to stay abreast of a new technology and be excited about it. It's not so much about only women, but even others. We don't get excited. I don't know how many people tried a ChatGPT, or if there is a launch of a new, you know, AR, VR headset. I mean, we may not get access to that headset, right? Because either we can't afford it or it's not launched in India. But why not at least watch the launch being done by that company to understand what is this AR, VR headset? So I think if you're in the tech industry, you need to continuously be excited about the new technology. And don't have to pick up everything. Then you specialize in something. Because I think we own it. We own the responsibility to evangelize and excite our customers to deploy new technology. For that, we first need to be excited. And I think once you have that, there is a lot more that even women and young women professionals can do. They may be a lawyer with a tech law background. I think there's so much they can add in value. They can come into this field. Everything about AI and trustworthy AI, there's a lot where, you know, other women professionals who have been in the risk space or chartered accountancy space, legal space, I think they all can contribute. Because it's AI, I mean, there's a lot of focus when you talk about AI is, you know, the technical part of AI. But there's a lot about the governance part of AI, responsible AI. There is a lot about, you know, how do you implement those frameworks. So I think be excited about technology, evangelize new technology with customers.
Thank you, Rama. That's super inspirational. The message to all women, not just the women who want to enter technology as a domain, but as users who are constantly in the middle of technology and using that for our work delivery, for our social media interactions, for everything literally, right? It's all around us. Be curious, be excited about it, learn more about it, and, you know, be a learner constantly. Thank you so much for this time and for this very, very insightful talk. Really, really appreciate your time, Rama. My pleasure in hosting you today. So that's a wrap on yet another episode of EY India Insights podcast special series. Stay tuned for more inspirational conversations like the one we had today with Rama Vedashree. Thank you.